Okay, I'm going to do the introduction then. Today is June 28, 2017, recording of the Courtroom Observers Committee conference call. And if anybody's got anything to say, go right ahead.
This is Dick Cliff from Peoria. Dick Cliff from Peoria, Illinois. On these conference calls in Peoria, the way they're doing is if they think you've got something against them, they'll wait until everybody's out of the courtroom and you're the only one in there. Am I correct that on the 14th of June, a directive was put in to all public offices, including the courtrooms, schools, hospitals, and so forth, to remove the war flag and replace it with the flag of peace? Is that correct?
When you say flag of peace, what are you talking about?
That is a flag that was originated before the American flag, and the stripes go vertical instead of horizontal.
I thought that's what she was talking about. And where would this directive come from?
I thought I got it from this group.
I hope not.
You hope not?
Yep.
Why?
Because it would be incorrect.
Hello, this is Greta from Michigan.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
We hear you.
Yes.
Bless you. Okay, I'll just sit quietly and listen. The last time I couldn't communicate.
If they were going to make any kind of a change, they would get rid of the military flag and they would put the American flag in.
Well, that is the original American flag.
Yeah, it's 24 hours.
Yeah. Now that flag, flag of peace is on a monument in President Kennedy's funeral site.
Let your electricity company know you have oxygen.
It would not be used.
No, it'll work. I'll do that.
Yeah, good discount. All right.
Terry?
Yes.
Yeah. Terry? Have you seen the courtroom checkoff sheet that is on the CO site?
I'm not sure what you mean by the courtroom checkoff sheet. I mean there are
it's new. It was discussed last meeting. And there is one there now.
Are you talking about the notifications? Let me go on the site because
I had pull it up, Terry. Yeah, it's right. I uploaded it earlier.
Okay, just logging in here. And where do we want to go at this point?
Courtroom Observers.
Okay. Okay, Courtroom Observer Group. Which one of these tabs do we want? I think I'm going to have to lower the zoom on my screen here because I don't think I'm seeing everything. Okay. All right. which one of these on the drop down are you referring to?
I gotta blow my screen up to see it. That would be the Courtroom Observers Committee, third one.
Right, I got that. So you got a drop down for about six different things here.
Yeah, take the third one, Courtroom Observers.
Okay.
Committee.
Information and contacts. Okay.
Yeah, scan down to just below the guy with the telescope, and it says Courtroom Observers Checklist.
Okay.
We added that this week. Might want to go over that. I think it's a pretty good guide of what to look for when you go into the courtroom to note if the judge is doing his job, you know?
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that to my attention.
Okay.
Sure. I brought that to your attention so that you have something to discuss with the rest of the members here and on the call.
Okay.
The abductions and disposals with under us.
What was our last comment?
Unintended, I think. We muted it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this was sent to me by New York Michael, and we appreciated it. It's a good list if you want to read through it and, you know, discuss it a little bit.
Yeah, some of these things are new to me, you know, that I didn't realize were a problem. Seizure of the pocket constitution, for number one.
Right.
Hadn't heard of that one before. Failure to allow filing of defense papers. Yeah, I've experienced that.
Amen.
Finding of facts. Yeah, that's a big one. Failure to allow jury trial. That's another big one. Failure to recognize and follow the Constitution. Well, that should be number one. Well, I don't think I have to read off all of these, but it's pretty comprehensive, and I think these are a good list of.
It's not just for you.
I know.
You know, everybody on the call needs to know about it, and they need to go in and take a look at it. But it's something that everyone can discuss here on the call. And so
right.
It might be a good idea to read each one of them and see if there's any comments from anyone.
Okay. All right. So I left off at failure to allow jury trial. All right. Failure to recognize and follow the Constitution. That's a big one. I don't know if anybody's got any comments on any of these. Failure to produce verified complaint of damaged party. Failure to produce damaged party. That's interesting. You know, when a cop don't show up and they... you know, want to adjourn it to a different time. Failure to allow cross-examination of damaged party. I don't know, you know, how often that happens. Failure to meet elements of complaint. Yeah, people should, there's a good link. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but it addresses, you know, how poor these complaints are, and they don't meet, you know, what a real complaint is. Failure to prove jurisdiction and operate in unknown jurisdiction. Well, yeah, we hear about that one every week, just about. Failure to show the nature and cause of charges.
Amen.
That's a big one. Why? Who did somebody want to make a comment?
Well, I don't know when it is appropriate to comment. I certainly don't want to interrupt your meeting.
Let me just finish reading off the list here.
Okay.
Failure to address proper party on court document per Stiles manual, all caps, people not persons. Police cannot be a witness and complainant at the same time. There must be a verified complaint or damaged party. Traffic tickets are not jailable offenses, only violations unless damaged persons or property. And performed summary judgment. Well, that happens all the time. Okay, yeah, that's the whole list right there. So if anybody wants to make a comment, please do so.
I'd like to make a comment, if I may, briefly. I have been a victim of Genesee County broad-spectrum corruption on the judicial side of the probate court, specifically. And I spent 4.5 months in jail, and my charge was civil contempt of court, indefinite incarceration. Have you ever heard of that charge, sir? Anybody? Civil contempt of
court,
indefinite incarceration. My attorney was arrested for trying to speak on my behalf, later fined $400,000 as the incentive plan through dropping me as his client. And it was quite effective, and I can't say as I blame him, do you?
You said this happened in probate court?
There is a rogue judge over there in Genesee County that's worthy of being exposed. And blessed be God that I have every document, much to their chagrin. Right now, even as we speak, there's a bench warrant for me, supposedly, but nobody can seem to find it. But if you ask Owosso PD, they say there is one. So is there or isn't there? I've been stripped of everything I've owned 3 times now. And they've taken over $700,000 to date. It's deep. It's wrong. And I need somebody to look at this. Because, I have naively thought all my life, I'm now 56, that the judicial arena was where people that were done wrong would go to get things spun around and done right. I was so naive. I had no clue what corruption was in the courtroom done. So it's shocking. It's beyond shocking. But to make a long story short, my belated husband, and I knew each other for 5 years. When I married him, I was 50. Yes, he was older than me. He was 83. There's no law against that. He certainly had a bright, bright, bright mind and was physically very fit. But to make a long story short, his niece, after my husband passed away, sued me. First time she sued me, she said that her marriage wasn't legal. And my attorney brought in paperwork and showed that, in fact, it was, and showed his written will that was notarized by him. And so the judge dropped the case. Bam. Case closed. Denied. So I thought it was over. Oh, no. Now she sues me again. And this time it's that my husband had no clue what he was doing. The license may have been legitimate, but he was out of his mind. My attorney brought in 8 affidavits from professional entities, Morgan Stanley, Raymond James, Wells Fargo, Citizen Bank, 2 medical doctors, and 2 sheriff inquiries. While my husband was still alive, his niece had the audacity to try to bring in an investigative sheriff's department to prove him a bottle off. They closed the case because it was not legitimate. My husband had a bright mind, and his medical doctor even validated that right up until the day he passed away. He was clicking on all cylinders. So that was simply to try to overtake him, and boy, did that make that Russian man mad, mad beyond mad. So then she sued me for the 3rd time. I thought it was over with because the judge denied that 2nd motion to sue me. Then she shifted gears and she got a different attorney. And from that point on, nothing was legal in that courtroom thereafter, nothing. She sued me this time for undue influence. She didn't say that the marriage license wasn't legal, and she didn't say that John didn't know what he was doing. This time she said, I forced John against his own volition to marry me, which was insanity. But nonetheless, to make a long story short, that whole shenanigan came down like the show must go on. I've never seen anything like it. I was accused at the very end of stabbing my husband 3 times in the shoulder and grotesquely bruising his groin. They passed around a 3-foot by 3-foot poster to each juror to have and to hold and to look at in horror and gasp. You should have seen their face. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? My $59,000 attorney is setting, and he's not standing up defending me, and I'm trying to defend myself from the witness stand. And the judge stopped me, and she said, you will only answer the questions that you are being posed. And I was trying to defend myself and say, I never stabbed my husband. The thing is that it said stab wounds, not stab wounds. They knew that. It was to taint the jury. And furthermore, my husband was in the hospital for a week, a little over a week before he passed away. There would have to be documentations of stab wounds. Was it sutured? What happened? Did you file a police report? Because when somebody gets stabbed, there better be a police report. No police report. No documentation
ma'am?
Of stab wounds.
Are you there? I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry to interrupt you. However, this is not... this is not the proper place to bring all this up. You need to talk on Monday night.
Oh, bless you. Please forgive me. I'm so sorry. I will hang up and call back Monday night. I will do that. Please forgive me. I didn't understand that.
Well, why don't you listen to the rest of the call?
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything, Robert, but I knew you had an instruction on that, and I didn't want to interrupt her.
Sometimes, you know, this is, we can't give any advice on legal matters, and we don't particularly know anything about the legal matters. We are just talking about courtroom observers and what we need to know to do that job. And so there's no way that we can even give you any advice or anything.
Dear God, what will I do? My Lord.
Furthermore, guys,
there was nothing on the death certificate because my husband was not stabbed.
Well, you need to talk to John on the Monday night call.
Okay, I'll do that, and I'll hang up. Please forgive me. By the way, I'm still licensed to carry a weapon. I have been since 2010. I work in the medical field, so they do criminal history checks on me frequently, and I've never, ever had a glitch against me. To be incarcerated for 4.5 months is unconscionable. A civil contempt of court and indefinite incarceration, that is crazy. That is insanity. And please forgive me, but I will get off from here, and I won't bother you, but I'll call back on Monday, gentlemen, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, it's people are hurting, and people need to be heard, and I get that, and I feel sorry for all of them, but this is just not the proper place for this to happen. And sometimes you just have to go against how you feel and just lay it out there.
I know. We're already 20 minutes into the call, and we haven't really discussed any things that, on that list yet.
Yes, let's get back to that.
Well, I don't have the panel in front of me. I can't see how many people are on here. But if there's anybody who has, experience with any of these violations, please feel free to pipe in.
Well, you know, discuss those things, because these are things that, as a courtroom observer, you need to be watching for. And if you, you know, you just need to be able to recognize these things. And this is why I suggest that we discuss this list, and maybe somebody has an idea of, you know, something else that maybe should be on it, or you know, different. Get an idea of what people think about a list like that. Maybe everybody needs to download that list to carry with them into the courtroom so they have it to refer back to.
I have a question, guys.
Go ahead.
This is Ed from Duncan, Oklahoma. I came on a little bit late, so I didn't hear that list. Can you guys just go over that list one more time for me, please?
Yeah, sure. Let me just go back to that page. I found the conference call, panel. Let me see what that is.
If you're just on your iPhone or whatever, Terry, I can read them for you if you want.
Go ahead, because I'm having a little trouble finding them. My computer's a little slow.
Okay, number one, and these aren't put on in any particular order of priority or importance, really. They're just, you know, little one-line thoughts on things to watch for. The first one is harassment and or seizure of pocket constitutions or jury nullification handbooks. Now, this happened out in Portland. People that were handing out free constitutions on the street, I think it was Homeland Security ran them down to the sheriff's office and tried to get them arrested for that. When they were checked to go into the courtroom, they couldn't appear in the courtroom with the pocket constitution showing where you could see U.S. Constitution on it. You either had to take it out or turn it around or put it in your pocket. And they've been harassing people for speaking about jury nullification and the trial out there, and they even banned the topic. I think they ran the jury out when they gave the notice that this was not to be discussed, jury nullification, not to be discussed in her courtroom. Any comments on that, I guess?
Is that Judge Brown that you're talking about?
Yes, the one
yes.
and only. Okay, the second one is failure to allow filing of defense papers. And I think this is probably both of the trials in Nevada and Oregon.
Yes.
They severely limited what the defense was allowed to do and the number of witnesses they were allowed to bring in and so on. And the amount of time they had for rebuttal, everything was limited. The third one, watch for the judge or prosecutor. Failure to provide and include findings of fact with denial of defendant's papers. The next one, as everybody knows, failure to allow a jury trial. No petit jury. The next one is failure to recognize and follow the Constitution, which is treason against the Constitution. I think it was Judge Brown. I think it was also the one in Nevada that banned the Constitution, any mention of it from her courtroom,
yes,
if I remember right.
Both of them.
Yep. Couple of honeys. Then the next one is failure to produce a verified complaint of damaged party. Okay. The next one is failure to produce the damaged party. Then failure to allow cross-examination of the damaged party. In other words, total control of the court. Then we come to failure to allow cross-examination of the damaged party. Then failure to meet elements of complaint. The next one is one of John's favorites. Failure to prove jurisdiction and operate in unknown jurisdiction. Amen. The next one is failure to show the nature and cause of the charges. Then we have failure to address proper party on court documents per Stiles manual, parentheses, all caps, people, not persons. The next violation, police cannot be a witness and a complainant at the same time. There must be a verified complaint of damaged party. Traffic tickets are not jailable offenses. Only violations unless damage to persons or property. And then the final bottom line, performed summary judgment. I have all the facts. I do not need to have a trial by jury. I can rule on this. Amen. That's the list.
Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah, number three. Can you read that again? Read it one more time.
Third one? Okay. One, two, three. Failure to allow jury trial. Oh, excuse me, that's four. Judge, prosecutor, failure to provide and include finding of fact with denial of defendant's papers.
Okay, what that one refers to is when the judge looks at a piece of paper or the defendant says, did you read my motion for this or my paperwork that I filed for jurisdiction and so forth, and they look at you and they say, denied, denied, yep, denied. And they refuse to put in any finding of fact as to why their ruling has any substance in law.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was referring to in that one.
Right.
And I had one other point, too. I was going to add another one in there, and it kind of slipped my mind when I was thinking about this here one. But I'll probably come up to it here pretty quick.
Hey, Ed, I got a suggestion for you. There's a document called "It's a Treatise on Arrest and False Imprisonment." It's a very good publication, and the website name is youhavetheright.com, and it covers just about everything. So you might want to take a look at that.
I will, and everybody else too, and you can take from that and add your own list. I mean, that was just a suggestion for people to think about when they go into court. But it's very, very dry. In other words, they're going to have to look at it and research it and add the constitutional violations that go along with each one of them. I didn't have the time, but I wanted to get something in place so that we could work at it. And anybody's ideas and help is really appreciated for that until we can come up with a good substantive document to look at when we do go into court and people can download it and pass it out to their other friends that go to court with them.
Yeah, thanks for that, Michael.
Yes, you're very, very welcome. Okay, I yield. Thank you.
Anybody have any comments on any of those?
Yes, I have one.
Go ahead.
This is Ed from Duncan again. Obviously, this list that you mentioned, of course, they're probably violating, if not most of them, all of them, on a regular basis throughout our country. So my question is what is the if there is any default kind of procedure on our end where we can avoid of course this is all unconstitutional, but how do we approach this if one of our friends or something like that, how do we advise them to not get into that situation in court? And are there affidavits or something that we can submit into the court before the case to bring it to an upper court or something like that?
Well, that's exactly why we want people to learn how to recognize these things and know about them, is because as a courtroom observer, you're taking notes and you're writing an affidavit for the defendants. And, because take action, they need the affidavits. And so that's part of the job of the courtroom observer, is to write an affidavit to help them. And, you've gotten this information firsthand because you're in the courtroom and you are hearing it. And so your affidavit is valid.
Oh, okay. So then at that point, by creating an affidavit and submit it to you guys, then you guys can take the next step to take action against the court. Is that what I'm assuming here?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Ed? Ed?
Yes.
Okay. When you file an affidavit in the courtroom as a court observer, now you become a competent fact witness.
Okay.
Which is more important than just a plain old witness, because you have the facts there in front of you, and you are
okay.
An eyewitness to what's going on with the crimes the court is committing against the defendant.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. Okay. You get me?
Okay.
Yes. So that in itself is the leverage that we need, because that becomes part of the case itself.
Yes. We don't go to court just to sit there and just to watch. We go to watch and observe and to make a report for the defendant in the event.
Right.
When he does come back and files a lawsuit against them, now these are the facts that he can use in his case, because now they have affidavits from the observers to substantiate his claim. And it basically becomes a cause of action. Once we can tie each one of the violations to a constitutional violation, now that becomes a cause of action.
Okay, that's very powerful. I get it now. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Hope I made myself clear.
Perfectly. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And through that, you begin to see how important it is to be a courtroom observer and have the knowledge needed to be effective, to know the Constitution or at least have a working knowledge of it. And it's always a good idea also to know how to write a proper affidavit. Saves time and you know, you do a better job for the defendants.
Another question, guys.
Hello?
I have another question.
Okay.
Go ahead. Somebody.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had tried to go on the website to find that affidavit that you guys were talking about last week, the sample. I don't know if I just had a brain fart or not, excuse my expression, but I couldn't find it. Is there any, can you tell me where that is exactly?
Yeah, if you go to the grand jury tab, scan down to the foreclosure tab, and I think it's item around 6 or 7 in that list, and you'll find it. It's
okay.
The affidavit. It's a general purpose affidavit.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Hello.
Hello, Crystal.
How you doing? I went to court yesterday for this lady. As a matter of fact, she's a veteran, and they are trying to take her house, and it's been on TV. And so I contacted her, and I said, look, I'm going to court. I'm going to the courtroom as a court observer and stuff. And this was very surprising to me, and I think we all need to go once a week because we're going to be hearing so many crazy things that have been going on in the court, which is unbelievable. Her and these other ladies that were on TV, they were all veterans. And when they came home from the service, their families and everything was displaced. They lost their jobs and what have you. So the Habitat for Humane, the Habitat, they had, you know, they all helped build these houses and all that. What they're doing, they're taking all the Habitat homes back and reselling them. And they've been evicting the people. So I said, wait a second, that is, I know you have to, you know, it's federally funded and you donate time. So now it's the same attorneys that do the closing, and now they're doing the foreclosures. So we better keep our eyes open on that. I was shocked. I couldn't even believe, you know, and it all started. And I also got in contact with WNSNBC, Al Sharpton. And so we're sitting there talking. I made mention, so I want to see if we can get Gerard or John or somebody, we can get them on the show. You know, I was supposed to get back to them. And that's what I've been doing this week. And I got like about, I met about 8 people yesterday. Quite a few have their degrees from college and all that. So I told them to go on the website, National Liberty Alliance, what have you. And, you know, because I said everybody's going through all kinds of crazy situations. And a lot of retired teachers, principals, police officers, they're all now beginning to. Because everybody's going through the same crazy thing. And in our state, there's a lot of foreclosures because the colleges are taking all the people's property and the attorneys, you know. It's all like corporations and businesses. And that's all I have to basically report. But, I mean, we got to keep our eyes open. And if we can even go to court once a week, just go into any courtroom, because there's so many crazy things that are happening, and they're all getting very, very nervous. Oh, and one other thing, when I told all the people, I said, well, contact your state representatives, your Congress, all of them, you know, and ask them about the National Liberty Alliance and all these illegal things that are happening. And they have heard of it, so they've all been notified, you know, but they all seem like they're running scared. And when I went to the court yesterday, they came to the side window, and the person that they told me who retired, the chief clerk, he was there.
And I saw, I said, oh, I thought he retired. So. Okay, but that's all I have to report to you on.
Thank you, Crystal.
You're welcome.
Anybody have any more comments or questions or...
I do. I thought of something when Crystal was talking. Another thing, too, is how, well, the list that is furnished in NLA is only half of what is necessary for a proper court case. Okay, now, it's going to be, if we're going to go and be an observer, and if we know the people, that's excellent, because what the observer's job would be, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but is to talk with the defendant. And the defendant needs to know their rights and which questions that they need to have answered as well. Because if the issue does not arise for getting competent answers from the prosecutor or the judge, then we're not going to be able to say, well, there was a violation there. So we need to pickle them in the corner through whatever paperwork the defendant files and make these guys violate their own laws. You know what I'm saying?
That's getting... I agree with you. However, not everybody's going to be able to do that. They just don't have the knowledge.
Hello? To piggyback on what you just said, that's a great idea. And what we need, I think I had mentioned it before, we need to start having 10 words a week of vocabulary in this course and, you know, and just learning. So people are going to be start being familiar with it. And also, it's just like when I started going to the courtroom, was it 3 years ago now, 2014? You know, one of the words I learned, am I a public servant in this court? And the judge said to me, no. I turned around and I looked at the audience. I said, is this my grand jury? He said, no, I'm the grand jury. I said, you just committed a treason, you know. And I said, I would like your resignation. He told me to basically get out of his courtroom. But as again, because everything that they say, it's on the transcript. There you got the court stenographer typing up everything. Also, another thing, what I asked them, can I see a sworn notarized affidavit on the contract that I signed with you? And I asked for the jurist number in their contract. If we could remember, like, some of the 4 or 5 major points and stuff like that, you know, because they have to sit there. And that's how, you know, and then I got my transcript, which I also sent it in, you know, because they'll say, do you have anything to say for yourself, you know?
Right.
Well, as an individual in the court like that, you can do that. But we, as a courtroom observer, we need to be very careful on what we might say.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could construe what we're doing as providing legal advice without a license.
Well, I was doing it for myself.
Yeah, well, that's fine. If we were to take the defendants off to the side or something and start giving them all this advice, you could end up having problems yourself to where you're going to be a defendant. And this is one of the things that we have to be careful about.
Okay, all righty.
Well, we won't do it at the courthouse. This is something that needs to be done prior.
On the side,
perhaps,
right.
You're perhaps in their home or your home or at a coffee shop. You know, something to where we can sit with them eye to eye and give them the security that we're behind them and to give them a list of the questions and areas to which are important to be able to break away from this nonsense. And if you guys want a list, of the different things. I did it for a friend of mine a while ago, and there were all kinds of questions where it just backed them right into the corner, and they couldn't do anything with it. And I could look that up on my computer, and I could furnish it to the NLA to where the observers could use that to maybe help the defendants so that they know what's happening instead of just sitting there and letting the judge just run the court and roll right over them, because that's supposed to be our court. Even though it's an Article 1, we still have some rights in that court, but
well,
they don't give them to us.
We do. And,
okay, one of the questions, the main questions, is like was just brought up, is how does this apply to me?
Mm-hmm.
That's the main question. Where do I fit in this? Where's the contract? Like that was just stated. Where was the contract that I signed?
And I asked them for a notarized affidavit, you know, because I said I never signed it. And I said, and here's my paperwork, which I had acknowledged. I had knowledge of it because I worked in the assessor's office. I did that work for almost 40 years. So we did the recordings of the deeds and all that. You know, you can't change. My husband was a bank manager, so you can't sit there and change people's contracts or whatever on a deed or whatever the case is. And then, like, as a matter of fact, the last time I was in the courtroom, the judge was asking, is this a MERS case, M-E-R-S? He said, I don't want any of those cases. So they said, no, it's not. And he goes, I'll take the case, because that's that illegal scanning. But again, you know, it's just like when we asked for, you know, because I asked them, I said, well, I would like a common law grand jury of my peers. And they go, we don't do that for foreclosures. And it's only between the judge and the attorneys,
right.
You know. And I'm like, well, you know, I can't understand why we can't have a court case or a common law grand jury of our peers, you know.
What we need to do is to get them to answer these questions.
Okay.
Why is not a grand jury permitted?
Well,
we have to find a way.
We have to understand something there. A grand jury is a jury of 25 people that look at a case and decide whether it has the merit to go forward. When you're actually in the courtroom, then you're looking at a petit jury of 12 people.
Right.
Mine was 6, and they had 2 alternates.
Yep.
But half these Article 1 courts won't even allow a petit jury to stand or to sit in the case.
You're right.
And the other thing is, when the judge in a jury trial, when the judge gets up there and he says that you are to understand the law as I give it, that also is a violation, and that is tampering with the jury.
Right.
That's right.
And also, for like my case, they gave the jury my medical records, and it wasn't even my medical records, and they voted against me. And one of the jurors went running her mouth about my case to a person. So I got the affidavits from that person. And I said, oh, my God. And then when I finally got hold of it, this is exactly what that person was saying. I said, I dare them. But it wasn't even mine. They got my name mixed up with the – we have the same name, but it was a different person altogether, a different – you know. And which was illegal. So, I mean, there's so much craziness that's been going on.
Well, I do agree with Crystal on the point of, you know, if you have the time, go to a courthouse, pick a courtroom, and go in and observe. Not only does it give you a practice, it really gives you an education of how corrupt they can be.
Yeah.
Now, I used to do that a lot in juvenile courts, and it's amazing things that you hear there. that it is good practice, and you get a lot of knowledge. Maybe it's knowledge you don't want because it just shows the corruptness, but it also helps you with, being able to write your affidavits or reports, whatever you're writing.
Well, one thing I'm so glad what I got accomplished this week, we got a big group of veterans, men and women now. You know? Just by me catching this woman on TV, and I got a hold of her, and I said, oh, my God. You wouldn't believe the mess that's going on. So, you know, it's expanding. And I said, well, you know what? At this point, I said, I think the Congress, State Rep, Bloomington, all of them need to be involved with this mess now. Because how are they going to explain themselves? You know, because people are beside themselves. People are speaking up. And like she said, we serve the country. We were separated from our family. We lost our homes and jobs. And we had to come back and start our lives all over. Now they're throwing us out on the street.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, but people want to hear the story, though, right? Because Habitat and it's the same attorneys that are stealing the people's homes, and they are the debt collectors.
Well, that happens in a lot of the foreclosures.
Yeah, but I'm just saying the Habitat, whoever thought about that one? That's, you know what I'm saying?
That one really surprised me.
Well, I mean, I was shocked too. I was floored, and I said, wait a minute. You all, she goes, yes, we had to help build these houses, give all this time, this and that. You know, and they always have it on TV, and here's the keys to your house, and da-da-da-da-da. And they said they've been taking all their homes. There was about 10 of them on TV.
Yeah.
You know, two of them are already lost. But as I said, well, we definitely got to get you signed up. And I told them about the donation and stuff, what have you. And I got their numbers, and I said, well, you know what? If it's happening to you here, it must be happening all over the country.
Yep, it is.
You know.
Well, we're getting close to the end here, and there's something that I cannot say often enough, and that is for courtroom observers to look as professional as possible when you go into the courtroom. Dress nicely.
Oh, absolutely.
Men, button-up shirts with tie. You know, if you can, the better you look, the more you're intimidating the judge and the prosecutor.
You see, they know me. They all know me there at the court.
That's part of the job that we do is intimidation of those people. We don't go up and talk to them unless they talk to us. We just smile and take our notes, and we have our badge, and they know what we're doing, and it scares them.
Mm-hmm.
So look as nice as possible when you
dress
go in as a courtroom observer.
Absolutely. And that's what I tell them. I said, put on a nice skirt and top or a dress or whatever, you know, or dress for success. No, you know, even like the young people, pull up your pants, dress for success. Like you're going for a job, you go in there and then you dress for success. When you take yourself seriously, people will take you seriously, you know? And,
well, I personally have caused a prosecutor and judge to throw charges out because I was there as a courtroom observer taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know it works. I know they're intimidated.
Good.
That was a personal experience I had, and I just sat there smiling.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good feeling.
That's wonderful.
So, anyway,
Robert?
Terry, if you're ready to close her down.
Yeah, Robert. I just wanted to make a comment. Oh, go ahead. Somebody asked for Robert. Go ahead.
Chad, sorry. I'm not trying to interrupt, but on July 21st in Buffalo, the Western District Federal Court, there's a big case coming up, a foreclosure, and it's going to be very important. My friend who's in the case, the last name is Buchek, he has filed with the courtroom observers for having observers attend. I'm going to be there with him, and we would like to get anybody else in the Buffalo area to be a party to it. And it's July 21st, and he put all the information as to the time and the date in the courtroom, and it's Judge Scretany and the case. And this is going to be one of the very last foreclosure hearings that is going to take place, and he's got him scared and running. And the case involves HSBC, who has sold the note on the foreclosure and doesn't even have a claim. And the paperwork that he filed into the case, the judge has agreed with them. So it's going to be very interesting when this whole thing comes down. There's a lot involved. And that brings up another point is, would it be possible to have a time and a meeting whereby people could discuss their cases? I know Monday night John doesn't really set a lot of time for that, nor does he even want to get into them. So is there any way
that might be something that you need to speak with John about, and maybe he'll agree to set aside some time to meet with you guys.
Okay.
I think that would be the best option.
Right, like that lady from Genesee County there, she wanted to talk about her case, and granted, we don't talk about the cases on our calls here, but even on Monday night, it's very limited if he does even want to take the case.
Well, it is. If it's something special, John will usually agree to meet with you if you get a hold of him and make arrangements.
Right, right. Okay, as long as people are aware of that, that's good. That's good. And when the courtroom observers meet for a particular party and the emails go out and so forth, a suggestion is for whoever's going to attend or can attend to contact that person personally. Don't just show up, but let them know that you're going to be there for them. And that will help them get the confidence the night before when they have to go in. And perhaps you could discuss their case with them a little bit and to find out what the charges are and what their defense is going to be. And we could help them out that way also.
And when is this case going to be?
It's going to be in Buffalo, New York, at the federal courthouse.
Okay,
downtown
but when
Buffalo.
Is it? You said in August?
July 21st.
Okay.
And
well,
we'll
try to put our feelers out there because, you know, that's what we've been doing, trying to, because everybody I meet, people got family and friends all over the place.
Absolutely.
You know? And everybody's going through it. So, like, me being a witness and, other people that I know, if you got family and friends here, you know, get them involved because everybody's going through the same similar problems. And so this way we get them to the courthouse, this and that. The kids are out of school. You know, there's so much. So we'll try to just work our ends and see if we can get people, you know, and just follow up on it. I'm trying to do the best I can do with, you know, just the phone calling and talking to people because people need to be heard.
Right. I believe it's 9 o'clock in the morning, and I believe this is one case, Crystal, that would be beneficial to you to be a part of in one way, shape, or form, or get to understand what he's doing and the things that you have done and to try to link it together. And we need to put our minds together, everybody who's involved in these cases, and put something together so that we can go in there and win these cases.
Yeah, but as I said, Buffalo, I think, Buffalo's up near Canada. That's Buffalo.
Yeah,
a good
Niagara Falls.
They'll go out 10 hours from me.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that, but, you know, we have phones and stuff like that. And
yeah, but whatever I can do, please let me know, and I can try to, you know.
Right,
you know, we
right.
got my number, so we'll put our heads together between now and then. And see what,
excellent.
You know, connections, you know.
Sure, we'll
if
be
somebody
talking again.
Somebody, you know, we could sit there and just get that information. I'll work with you on that. Just, you know, just be in touch with me on that.
Excellent. Very good. Okay. I yield. Thank you, guys.
Okay, Robert, I just want to make an observation here with regard to your comment on the Monday night call. It appears
yes.
to have had an effect because, of course, we can all see, well, who's ever on the dashboard, that there's a lot more callers today than there have been in the past. So that was pretty effective, and I think you should do that every once in a while just to let people know about the Courtroom Observers Committee on Wednesdays.
I will be, and I have taken notice of how many people's there, and I'm enthused by the number, and I hope to see many more. And I thank everybody for coming in.
How many people today?
16.
Okay, good. And if everybody
okay,
could bring like 3 to 5 people in weekly, different
right.
states, we all got family and friends. Blow it out there.
Yeah, we're building and we're going to build more. So keep coming in, people, because more is going to be joining.
Right, right.
And I thank everybody for being here.
Okay. Thank you for putting on the show. God bless everybody.
Have a good night.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
That concludes the June 28th conference call for the Courtroom Observers Committee. Everybody have a good night.
Conference is being recorded.